7:45, quarter till 8. Coleman in for Tim Zimmer today. Doing a good job at the bumper music as we talk about offshore wind energy. See, because you're trying, Coleman. I like that. You're trying. You're making an effort.
I appreciate it, Tommy.
Tim Zimmer, look up Wally Pipp and Joe DiMaggio. That's all I'm saying. Greg Upton joins us now, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies. How you doing, Greg?
Doing good. Good morning, Tommy.
You know the story of Wally Pipp and Joe DiMaggio?
I do not.
I think it was Joe DiMaggio. Wally Pipp was hurt, and Joe DiMaggio took his place, and Wally Pipp never got back. Let's talk about, but I might have my baseball players confused. Who knows? Let's talk about wind energy, because as soon as you say wind or alternative energy, it becomes political, and some people say, oil, it's never going to go. And it's not about replacing oil. It's about monetizing this for Louisiana, correct?
Yeah, so there are definitely folks trying to monetize it. So a little history of kind of what's happened over the last few years and kind of where we are today, and of course some of the federal actions that happened last week with offshore wind. The federal government under the Biden administration was really trying to get offshore wind going. Part of that was the leasing process itself. So just like we lease offshore oil and gas here in the United States, and of course we do in the Gulf of America, we've done it for decades, the federal government's been making a push to do offshore wind leases for potential wind production in federal waters as well. And so there's a lot that goes into that. You designate these wind energy areas for potential development, and then you go through that regulatory process. And so we saw that moving forward, and there are several projects not in the Gulf of America, but up in the Northeast that are actually under construction or have just come online over the last year or so that have been a result of that process. At the same time, we had the Inflation Reduction Act, which extended those tax credits for offshore wind, which, of course, impacted the economics as well. The Trump administration has come in, and you might remember on the first day he came in, he signed a bunch of those executive orders. And one of those was a temporary withdrawal of all areas from the OCS from offshore wind leasing, and then a review of those federal leasing guidelines that happened at the same time. And then on July 7th, he did an additional executive order entitled Ending Market Distorting Subsidies for Unreliable Foreign-Controlled Energy Sources, which, of course, wind was a big target of that. And then last week, he came out in the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM. They announced that they're rescinding all designated wind energy areas from the OCS. And so what that really does is it says that the federal government, for all intents and purposes, is not going to move forward with future lease sales for wind at this time. And so the projects that are currently under construction, and there are two, one in Massachusetts and one in Virginia, those, of course, will move forward. They've already gotten through that process. Mm-hmm. But for new projects, it's probably not going to happen moving forward at this point.
So how does this compare when it comes to, like, wind farms? You know, you go to East Texas, and God knows you see miles and miles and miles of windmills, probably at other places throughout the country as well. I'm not driven through places like that lately. How does that compare with the amount of energy that could have been generated with the wind farms on land?
So an individual wind farm that's offshore will produce more electricity for a comparable size when onshore.
Say that part again, Greg.
So a wind farm that is offshore, mm-hmm, will produce more energy for its size, if you will, per capacity is what we say, but mm-hmm, think of the same size is an onshore one.
Okay.
And the reason the offshore one is more productive is because, number one, the scale of it, you can actually build these larger turbines because of just physically getting them there. You have this constraint of actually moving this equipment on land versus on the sea. But the other is because there's this what's called wind shear. And essentially, when the wind blows, when there's less friction at the surface, mm-hmm, that means that you get more wind. And of course, offshore, there's very little friction, right? It's just ocean for miles and miles and miles. Or on land, you've got trees and hills and these kind of things. And so, there's definitely a lot of potential growth for onshore wind in the U.S. We went from essentially no onshore wind 25 years ago to today about 10% of the U.S. electricity comes from onshore wind. So that's been an enormous growth in one source. Offshore wind, we're still, you know, again, we just have a few projects that are there. And so we were kind of projecting that that was probably going to grow over the next decade or so. But given these actions, less likely to do so.
Let me take a break. We come back. We'll talk about how far offshore are these things. And it seems like a lot of people get all spun up about wind just because it's not traditional or it's new. And I'm just thinking, if this is way offshore where nobody's ever going to see it anyway, why would you really care? But maybe you can answer that when we come back. Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies, is an economist, also about what effect will it have on Louisiana. Because I know Schwess built the boat that was going to service the wind field in Massachusetts. Greg, am I hurting myself here? Is that right?
That is correct. Yep.
Okay, so does that now put the kibosh on anything else that would happen as far as development here in Louisiana? 751, 9 till 8, traffic, WWL. 757, 3 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies, about the Trump administration canceling the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management leases in federal waters for wind farms. Did I get that right?
Pretty much, yep.
For the most part, okay. So I can remember visiting the family after Katrina in Texas and seeing these trucks with these big, giant white things. And at that time, I had no earthly idea what they were. Come to find out, they were blades for the wind turbines, right? So when it comes to people getting spun up about wind energy, and somebody texted in and saying, it's amazing how some people can be very conservative and embrace, what do you call them, Musk's cars.
EVs?
Oh, Tesla.
Teslas.
But yet EVs, be so against
wind energy. People get spun up about this. And how far offshore are these things? Are any of us likely to ever see them or not? Because it would seem like you'd be more upset seeing it off of the road of the interstate than you would, although it's on private property, than you would out in the water. Thoughts?
Yeah, so these are much larger than offshore platforms for oil and gas. Mm-hmm. And so unlike offshore oil and gas infrastructure that you're really unlikely to see, unless, of course, you're going out there fishing to go there specifically, mm-hmm. These offshore wind farms, they really are visible from shore. So I just looked up the South Fork, the one in Rhode Island that just became operational this last year. Mm-hmm. It's about 19 miles from shore. Mm-hmm. And you need to get about 30 to 40 miles away for it to be completely non-visible from shore.
So I'm guessing if you do that, then you have a problem with losing power as you transmit it back to where it has to go?
So it's actually not as big of a problem with the distance for the transmission. It's more of a problem for the expense of it. It gets deeper, so you have to deal with, you know, the deeper water. It's very expensive to build the transmission inland. So in terms of the distance, yeah, you could transport the power there, but moving deeper and deeper and further offshore gets much more expensive.
All right, so let's talk about the economics of it. I'm all for monetizing this, but if the government's subsidizing it, are we really monetizing it, or are we just getting government subsidies? Is there a future for wind energy in terms of efficiency, and is it the way to go?
Without the tax credits that were just rescinded by the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be tough to make offshore wind economics work in the U.S. right now.
So in that case, the marketplace would say, no, the technology's not there. Accurate or not?
Sure, that's fair. I mean, the technology's there. You can do it. It's just going to be a little bit more expensive, I think, than some of the other sources of power.
But not cleaner, but not profitable without the tax credits.
That's correct.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies, J.P. Moreau. We come back.